Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Disneyland announces ticket and reservation details, what attractions will be open when the parks return, project updates.
Alcohol expands at the resort, staffing issues, we talk about the rest of our trip to California, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of April 7th, 2021. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tig Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Todd B. for supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. The supporter Discord chat has been a great source of Disney magic from our supporters, like themed topic days, movie nights, and so much more. Of course, for our latest trip, we were in there posting pictures and all that stuff. There was a ton of Touch of Disney stuff in there from a lot of our fellow weekly tiers. So if you'd like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, our friends over at All Enchanting Ears have all sorts of exciting things happening this month. We've got some new coasters in the works for Galaxy's Edge. There's going to be ones that are for Oga's Cantina and Savi's Workshop now. So make sure you check out their Instagram for updates on when those are available. They're also introducing new ears this month, which, of course, you all know I'm very excited for. Again, make sure you watch their Instagram to see when those come available. And finally, last but not least, their Ear of the Month Club, which, if you haven't heard of, is pretty fantastic. You sign up with them and they send you a pair of ears every month. And you can do regular, like, headband style, mini style, or they have, like, hat styles like Tag really likes. And you can have that with or without a bow, all sorts of different things. But the Ear of the Month Club theme for April is attractions, of course, in honor of Disneyland reopening at the end of the month. So again, make sure you go check out our friends All Enchanting Ears on their Instagram at All Enchanting Ears.
Now let's get to the news. Today, Disneyland announced how ticket sales and reservations will work for the reopening on April 30th. To enter the parks, guests will need a park reservation plus a valid theme park admission ticket. Reservations are currently limited to California residents and groups of no more than three households. Reservations will launch on April 12th for guests that currently have a valid theme park ticket, no annual passes, no earlier than 8 a.m. Pacific time. On April 15th, guests will be able to purchase new theme park tickets. Reservations will be made available on a rolling basis for greatest access to the most guests. Starting April 9th, guests with a valid ticket can check to see what dates they can request reservations for. Disneyland recommends that guests log into their Disneyland account and add their park tickets to the account before attempting to get reservations for the best chance at success. Park hopping will be allowed, but only after 1 p.m. on the reservation date. Guests with multi-day tickets will have to make separate reservations for each day they wish to attend. For complete details, visit the link in our show notes.
Pretty exciting. There's a little disappointment that we don't have exact times, but kind of like with Touch of Disney tickets, I guess I'm not too surprised that they're not announcing a specific time that this stuff is all going to go. It is nice that they are saying at least no earlier than 8 a.m. Pacific, so we don't have to frantically be checking at midnight to see if things are available. So I do appreciate that they at least are allowing us to sleep in. But again, it makes sense. I think this is probably as maybe annoying as it might be that we don't have a specific time. It makes sense. So then, because we're just going to crash a server, let's be honest. Us Disney fans are wanting to get into Disneyland. Tag and I were like sitting at the gates, just hoping someone by some Disney miracle, we would be able to get in, but of course not. So it makes sense, even though it's kind of annoying. Something else, though, to note is dining. You will be able to book dining reservations starting on April 22nd at select locations, of course, with limited capacity. They do allow you to book your dining reservations up to 60 days in advance. So that's something else to check out. Again, and make sure you have the latest version of the app downloaded to be able to snag those dining reservations as well.
So I think this was really great with the tickets, how they're doing this, because you're able to go in early, so like the 9th, so you don't have the people who are not sure when things are going to be available or when they could book, so that kind of relieves a little bit of effort on the server there. Also, the fact that people that already have tickets get kind of that first crack at it, because that's also nice, because you've got people who had already bought tickets for different times, like before all of this happened, that now can be the first crack to like use them because they didn't get the opportunity to.
Yeah, and don't forget people that may have had multi-day tickets that weren't able to use up their full ticket. So say you had a five-day multi-day ticket and you only got to use two of your days before it closed. So it's nice that those people can get ahead and get those remaining days booked as well.
Yeah. And then April 15th with buying new park tickets. I think that's good because now some some questions came up in our chat earlier today about ticket pricing. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to go and be the same as it was in Disney World. I don't think the ticket pricing is going to change. Yes, there won't be entertainment. There won't be fireworks. There won't be parades. There won't be all that kind of stuff. Yes, the park hours are going to be limited. The park hours were posted that are going to be from, I think it was 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Yes. Mm-hmm. at both parks. So it is less than a normal day. But somebody brought up a good point, which I think is totally accurate from when Teresa and I were in Disney World. You're having less people in the park, so you mm-hmm. can cram a lot more into your Disney day by having the lower capacity limits. And of course, we're going to talk about the capacity limits a little bit later.
One thing that was interesting that Tag already touched on was park hopping. I was pretty shocked that park hopping was coming back right away because they did take... I don't remember how long it was. Now everything's kind of blurred together, but it did take some time for park hopping to return to Walt Disney World. So it's pretty fun that we're able to park hop right away for Disneyland.
Well, it's a lot different, right? Because Disney World, it takes quite a while to go between the different parks.
Oh,
Disneyland,
yeah.
It's just you hop across the Esplanade.
Yeah, but it's just one of those things with capacity restrictions that I would think it'd be... You know, do you have to, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Do you have to have a reservation at both parks to be able to park hop? I would assume so. Otherwise, how do you try and figure out capacity limits while park hopping? My luck, I would leave one of the parks, try to get to the other park and be like, nope, sorry, we're full. And then I go back to the original park and they're like, oh, nope, sorry, we're full. So that would just be my luck.
Poor Teresa.
One thing that was kind of interesting, which I guess I didn't follow how they did this for Walt Disney World super closely, so someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm surprised that there wasn't anything for Legacy Pass holders. They've been doing a lot of extra bonuses for Legacy Pass holders, so I'm surprised that there wasn't like an early window that Legacy Pass holders could either purchase tickets or make reservations or some sort of Legacy Pass holder perk that went along with this. But then again, I do think... it also makes sense that maybe they didn't, just because the people that are the ones that really want to get back in, of course, are probably all of the Legacy Pass holders. So I was a little surprised at that. But
well, Disney World did it where they didn't discontinue their annual pass holder program. So what they did was they had like 50% towards day ticket people, 50% annual pass.
That's right.
The annual pass stuff, of course, filled up quickly. Mm-hmm. I think Disneyland, like, it would just be... chaos. So we'll have to wait and see. And then, of course, Ken Potrock said that the new annual pass program would be rolled out when the parks opened. So that'll be interesting. That news should be coming down the tubes soon, too.
Well, the Orange County Register posted a list of attractions that will be open, which I don't know about you, but I've been on the edge of my seat wondering what's going to be open with the park. And they also, of course, said which attractions will be closed when the parks reopen. Some notable attractions that will be closed are the Jungle Cruise, Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters, the Monorail, the Matterhorn, Grizzly River Run, and the Animation Building. For the complete list, be sure to check out the link in our show notes.
Yeah, so my biggest thing was I was looking at this list and I was like, oh, interesting, Astro Blasters, which makes sense because lots of cleaning. But then
lots of cleaning, lots of touching. Yep.
Matterhorn bobsleds, I was very surprised with. I was surprised with the monorail, although the monorail was closed in Disney World as well. Grizzly the River Run, we're going to talk a little bit about that later with water attractions. But And you're going to be very sad because the entire animation building seems to be closed. That includes the Sorcerer's Workshop. That includes the Animation Academy. So,
but Turtle Talk with Crush, I believe, is still going to be open. So that's a little...
Okay, so you get that one little thing.
Yep, so that you get part of it, so which is interesting. It's interesting because some of these things, like the Matterhorn, I believe the Matterhorn's probably under refurbishment, and that's why it's closed, not because it's, you know, not a COVID-friendly attraction. I think that they're working on it. And then, of course, same thing, as we know, the Jungle Cruise is going for a refurbishment as well, so that is why they are not opening back up. There were a couple that I was... surprised that we're going to be open, though. Some other things that we thought were kind of high touch areas that we thought would be on the list that weren't. One of those was Toy Story Midway Mania. It was interesting to have Buzz closed, but Midway Mania open. So I guess I'd be interested to know what the line is as far as this one's okay, this one's not okay. Interesting.
Toy Story, you could. I think it's quick enough because remember, Buzz Lightyear is like the Omnimover, so it continuously moves, where I feel like Toy Story, they could stop it quick. Somebody could quickly take a wipe in and clean it and then put the next people on. But it'd be harder to continuously clean that. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. And then the big question is, how long will these things stay closed while this is all happening?
Another one that I was pretty excited for that I didn't think would make the list, the Main Street vehicles are going to be returning, which is pretty exciting and I think unexpected, because when we were in Walt Disney World, their Main Street vehicles were not running. They were being used for little cavalcades and stuff. So that's pretty exciting.
When Disneyland reopens, there will be some limitations on indoor attractions. Attractions have to be less than 15 minutes long and must be queued outdoors. There is a question on if Rise of the Resistance qualifies under this 15-minute limit. Pirates, Haunted, Small World, Great Moments of Mr. Lincoln are all about that length, so we'll have to see what happens with those. Other issues, like masks getting wet on attractions like Splash and Grizzly River Run, could pose issues, although Orange County Register said Splash will be open, but Grizzly River Run won't, so that kind of takes that one out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and same thing, the Orange County Register was reporting that Pirates and Haunted, and I believe also Small World, will all be open. Great Moments, however, will not be open when it reopens. So I don't know if I don't know. It'll be interesting. Again, what was that? What was that line? So is it between 15 and, you know, if it's closer to 15 than it is to 20, then is it okay? Or is there something that they can do to maybe speed these attractions through a little bit faster so that they can go under the... I don't know. I have no idea. But it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all this works. And I'm really curious with Rise because, you know, my biggest complaint when we went on in Disney World was it kind of broke the story up.
Yeah.
There was talk about skipping through some of those initial story building steps to make it a shorter attraction. But I feel like that's really going to kill the overall intended experience. So we'll have to wait and see.
It's one of those things, right, that you have to kind of weigh out. Would you rather experience a shortened version of it where you kind of have to go through some of those scenes a little quicker? Or would you rather not be able to experience it at all?
Well, what about Indiana Jones? Because they're talking about outdoor queues. So are you going to hold everybody in the outdoor queue and then make them walk quickly through that expansive indoor queue area?
Yeah, that was the one that I was thinking about like the most when we were talking about all queuing had to be done outdoors, was that hike from the outdoor section of Indiana Jones to the loading area, and what are the logistics of that going to be? And think of how long that queue line's going to be going out too, because yes, it's a big area that kind of winds around, but if we're being socially distant, making sure that we're staying 6 feet apart from each other, that's really not that big of an area. So that'll be interesting to see how they overcome that.
I have a thought for this. So, Jungle Cruise is not open.
Yep,
maybe they wind you through the up and down of the Jungle Cruise.
They could take over the Jungle Cruise queue. That's very, very true. Very true. The other thing, too, that I was wondering with Rise is you do have that section that's outdoors. So, I wonder if because you have an outdoor section, does that break up your ride time?
Does that, like, reset the time? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, because when you go from the outside to the inside, I mean, there is kind of a... If we had to wait like we did in Disney World, that was a long wait on that inside, and that would maybe count as a queue almost, because there was a line there. It's hard to tell. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Well, with Disneyland preparing to open in just a few weeks, there is a lot of work going on with new and existing projects, which can be seen with Mice Chat's aerial photography this week. The Matterhorn looks like there are workers on the mountain. Barges are likely servicing Fantasmic infrastructure. Splash Mountain appears to be having work done as well. Storybook Land has been drained and work has wrapped up on King Arthur's Carousel, the Haunted Mansion, and of course, Snow White's new Enchanted Wish.
Again, we've sort of already talked about this a little bit, but the fact that they're doing work on the Matterhorn was very unexpected to me. I don't know why. the fact that they're doing Fantasmic infrastructure work is also surprising because, you know, that's something that's going to take a really long time to bring back. You know, but again, I've been trying to remind myself that unlike Disney World, when they have reopened, They were a lot further away from what we expect to be the end of the COVID pandemic, where Disneyland is a lot closer to the end of the pandemic. So my guess would be that a lot of these things that we expect to be closed for a while will reopen sometime before the end of the year would be my guess. So the fact that they're doing all this infrastructure work now is good. And again, when we were at Touch of Disney, I was just very surprised that they were doing so much refurbishment work considering the fact that they'd been closed for so long and not bringing in income. That's great that they're, you know, investing into all of this. So when things can open, they're going to be their best.
Yeah, well, the other thing too is just think about all of the stuff that Disney typically does in a year as far as refurbishment and just general upkeep, and they weren't able to do that this past year now. So a lot of things I think are being smooshed into a shorter time frame, and so there's more things kind of happening on top of each other. And same thing with Matterhorn. We were talking about this when we were in the resort area. We were peeking in on Disneyland from our 8-story hotel room. No joke, we had binoculars. And we were peeking in we were talking about the Matterhorn. And we remembered, oh, that's right. It really, you know, wasn't that long before the parks closed that chunk had fallen off of the Matterhorn. And they kind of did like a patchwork thing. Are they going to take some time to really fix like the actual problem and like do a better job, since it was just kind of a patch job that they did prior? So maybe that's what they're working on. Who knows? But same thing with Fantasmic, you know, is it, yes, I think that show's going to be coming back sooner rather than later, but is this maybe just normal maintenance time for them? Kind of like when we were there and Grizzly River Run was drained, because it's just the normal maintenance time for that. So I wonder if they're kind of going back to their typical calendar of when they would go and do some general maintenance, refurbishment, upkeep stuff on attractions.
You're probably absolutely right. Orange County, where Disneyland is located, has entered the orange tier, which allows for a maximum of 25% capacity. Indoor capacity is limited to a maximum of 25%. Indoor dining is limited to a maximum of 25%. Orange County could move into the yellow tier soon, which would increase those levels to a maximum of 35% capacity, indoor capacity limited to max 25%, and indoor dining limited to a max of 50%.
You know, this worked out really well. It's crazy to think how long Orange County was in the purple tier, and then finally we got the red tier, and now, poof, we're in orange. So I feel like that yellow tier just feels like it's right around the corner now, which is great, because as Tag was just explaining, that means higher capacities for these things, which in Disney's case, right, Disney's a business. I know we have to keep reminding ourselves that, because it's a magical getaway and escape for all of us. But, you know, they are a business, so they do need to make sure that they're bringing in enough income so that it makes sense for them to be able to pay as many cast members as they have, and like just general upkeep and stuff like we were talking about in the last news article. But so, you know, so they do have a bottom line. They do have to make sure that they're not just bleeding money. So the more people that they can have inside, the better. Again, we're still just talking 35% capacity, which I'm trying to remember when we were at Walt Disney World, I think the capacity was about 30, maybe 35% when we visited in August. And that felt like nothing. It felt like we had the parks to ourselves. So it'll be interesting. It'll be really, really interesting.
So the governor announced that June 15th that they're going away from this tier system and the economy can open back up. So all of these tiers will go away.
The plan is that as long as everything stays the course and nothing catastrophic seems to happen, that they're hoping by June 15th they will be able to reopen the economy. So that's great news for us non-residents of California, because June 15th is looking like when we will be able to go and visit our favorite place, Disneyland.
Yeah, because I think the current guidance is during any of the tiers, while there's any tier in effect, no out-of-state visitors would be allowed. So
Well, after Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opened, it was just a matter of time before this next change showed up elsewhere in Disneyland. When the Blue Bayou reopens, it will have alcohol on the menu. This will operate similarly to how it works in Oga's Cantina over in Galaxy's Edge, which allows guests to order off a limited menu for beverages. Beer, wine, and a signature drink, which will be a hurricane, is what's rumored to be available soon.
Yeah, so a couple things with this that I wanted to point out when I was doing the research for this one is the Blue Bayou will not open with the park on April 30th.
Right, yep.
Which I almost wrote that in and then was like, nope, that's not right. But when it does, it'll have these limited options. So this is really interesting because a lot of people point to the fact that Walt didn't want alcohol in the park. But then, of course, Club 33 allowed alcohol in the park. And then, of course, with the opening of Galaxy's Edge. And then, of course, if you go back even further, you've got alcohol is allowed over in DCA. Of course, Epcot has a bunch of alcohol as well. I think that if they do it this way, and I think for table service restaurants, I don't really think it's a problem to have alcohol as long as, you know, servers and stuff are good at not, you know, letting people get wasted and walk around, because nobody wants to see that at Disneyland. So I think as long as it's monitored and handled appropriately, I think this won't be a problem. So it's kind of exciting. I know that they'll make a lot of money on it. I feel like alcohol is a huge moneymaker.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I think for me is okay with this too, is, you know, that it is limited to when you're at the restaurant. You can't order it and take it with you to go. But you're also limited to, I believe, just two drinks when you're there. So I think that seems fair. That seems reasonable. Like Oga's, these are going to be pretty pricey drinks. So I don't think anyone's going to be able to afford to go too crazy. And, you know, a hurricane makes sense for that location. The other thing, too, to kind of remember is that this isn't like, it's not like a bar. So don't think of it that way. It's not like you can go and order, I don't know, a rum and coke or whatever. It's whatever the specialty drinks are, but just going to be set to Blue Bayou. So I kind of have mixed feelings, and I remember how controversial it was with Oga's announcing that they were going to be serving alcoholic beverages, but I do think the way that they're doing it is okay. I wouldn't like to see what's happening in DCA come over to Disneyland, because in DCA, of course, you can just go order a beer and then walk around and go about your park day with beer in hand. So I don't personally want to see that in Disneyland. I do think this is a good compromise.
Continuing with their environmentally friendly approach, Disney Parks will start offering the option to purchase bamboo utensils at select dining locations starting this spring. They even come with a handy travel pouch to keep them clean and together.
I am such a nerd, but I was very excited about this.
They're neat looking.
I was thinking about, with Touch of Disney, actually, before we went, I was thinking about how many different, like, right? It's all tastes of things. So how many different plastic utensils are we going to be getting and tossing? How many different, like, cups and straws and, you know, all that stuff? And I'm kind of in this really weird space. I feel like I'm between a rock and a hard spot, because I'm kind of a germaphobe. So I would want to, but I'm also like very, I'm a germaphobe, but I'm very conscientious and trying to be more aware of how much waste I produce. So I'm trying to figure out, how does the germaphobe not always, you know, I almost brought cutlery with for Touch of Disney, because I was thinking about, I don't even want to know how many forks you and I used and threw away in that time that we were doing all of our tasting.
A lot.
So I was thinking about bringing stuff, but then I'm like, but I feel like I want to wash it, you know? So anyways, that's just me. But I think this is really exciting, and I would totally buy this probably for the parks, and I would want a second set so I could, like, take it with me for lunch and have a little Disney magic with me at work.
I like it. It comes with the little thing. I mean, it's almost like what people were saying about when people were stealing the forks or whatever.
Oh, the sporks.
Yeah, from Docking Bay 7. You know, these aren't quite as cool, but they're kind of neat. So, I don't know.
We're like going on and on and on about this. They're really not that fancy. I think we're probably just excited that it like is a thing and comes with
it
a pouch.
It comes with a carrying case. That's kind of fancy.
The pouch that has Mickey and Disney Parks branded on the side of it. It's just, I think it's very fun.
I don't know. We'll have to see. And then did they say how much they were?
They did not, but just a note that they are available at select locations. We don't know where yet. And while supplies last. So I'm hoping that if these are popular, that we see that they come back and that we don't miss our chance on getting them, because I think they're a great idea. This would be something like perfect. Why have they not been selling these at Animal Kingdom? I know this is a Disneyland podcast, but like Animal Kingdom was the first Disney park to have paper straws. So I'm surprised that this wasn't something that they started over in Animal Kingdom a while back. But for guests that attended the Touch of Disney event and liked the brisket mac and cheese, or maybe you were like Tag and I and we didn't have a chance to try it, the Disney Parks blog has posted the recipe to make it at home. There is quite a lot that goes into the various parts of the dish, but it looks like it will be quite tasty. Check out the link in the show notes to try your hand at this one.
Now, we did have a brisket mac and cheese when we went to the Knott's Festival, and that was pretty good, but I did not have this one.
I cannot believe this. Did you look through, you looked at this recipe, right?
There is a lot.
Holy bucket. So not, steps. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that you're making. So you've got pickled red onions that you put, of course, over the top, crispy fried shallots, which that sounds great, the smoked beef brisket, mac and cheese, and then there's also, oh, I guess the topping's the easy step. It's just barbecue sauce. But yeah. Oh, which then all this did was make me think of how much work did all of those delightful, tasty things that we had during the Touch of Disney, how much work went into making all those things too. Holy cow.
Well, they make them in a giant batch, so it's
still
not as bad, but yes. I'll tell you what, though. I was hoping that this was going to be the recipe for the carbonara mac and cheese, because that was so good.
Well, Disney's been releasing quite a few recipes, so there's hope, because we have one Touch of Disney recipe. Maybe the carbonara mac and cheese will come out eventually too.
Do they serve that elsewhere or like in the park? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. That may have been served at like previous food festivals, but I don't know that it actually like lives in the park normally.
They need to put that somewhere in the park, because that's really good.
It was great.
Guests that have attended a Touch of Disney have experienced some issues when it came to cast member staffing. Disney has had trouble filling all the shifts needed to properly staff all the locations when taking into account callouts. This additional work for the cast members that do work their shifts have caused those cast members to call out as well. The way Disney is calling back the most senior cast is causing a delay in getting the proper levels, which keeps this problem going, which also explains why the return park hours could also be limited to 9 to 7, because staffing.
Yeah. You know, and this was just really sad. I was reading, there was actually a thing put out by one of the unions that basically said and was asking cast members, please, 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 if you say yes, that you will be returning, please show up to your shifts. Because another issue that's going on is people are saying, yeah, you know, when they get the call back, they say, yes, I will return. And people are then calling out and saying, no, they're backing out at the last minute. So that's another problem, too, is then, you know, a day or two before the shift is supposed, they're supposed to show up for their first shift, they've changed their mind and they're calling out. So it's just unfortunate, because like Tag was saying, these call outs are then putting additional stress on the cast members that are working. I know the day that we were there, we were talking with one of the days that we were there was Sunday. We were talking with one of the PhotoPass photographers, and she was telling us that they had quite a few call outs that day. And so not all the PhotoPass locations were available that day, because they just simply didn't have enough people to be at each location. So that was just kind of sad. And I just feel bad. It's, you know, the cast members do a lot, and we keep saying how they're the ones making the magic. So it always makes me sad when there's extra stress put on cast members. So hopefully this problem will resolve itself. Hopefully with the parks opening, there will be more excitement to return to work. So people don't, you know, commit and then, you know, kind of have last minute doubt and back out. It's just, it's tough. I just can't even imagine. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And we kind of experienced that a little bit. I think one of the reasons that we had a little bit of a wait for our beef skewers, I think somebody was saying that there was just a staffing issue and stuff that day too. So yeah, please, you know, show up to your shifts if you're working or if you say you're going to work. Because I know you and I've both worked retail. We know how it is when people don't show up and then you got to pull more and just makes it worse. So,
yeah.
But cast members have been working really hard. We're really happy to have them all back at work. So thank you.
The other thing that the union had also mentioned was, which I guess I didn't think about this, but so people, so say, for example, you are normally a food service person and you're preferred place to work, you know, you typically work at this one location. Well, you may be more senior, but your location's not working. So they're still calling you back, but you may be assigned to a different area, a different part of the park than you're used to working. So that was also causing a bit of friction for cast members as well, because I just assumed that you'd be recalled to your spot, not just based on your seniority. I thought it was spot and then seniority. So like, for example, if the Silly Symphony Swings were reopening, they would then look at the list of who works the Silly Symphony Swings and go down the seniority list there. But no, it's just seniority, period, end of story. So it doesn't matter if you've always been working the teacups. Today you're going to be helping on the railroad. I don't know. You know, that's just random examples. I do not know specifics on how any of that works, but that's just kind of to give you a thought of how that's going.
Which reminds me, I have not been emotional about the Disney reopening until today, when somebody posted on social media that the train was pulling into the station because they were testing that attraction. And oh my goodness, I did not cry, but I definitely had some feels. So you know, we'll post that in the show notes as well.
You know what's really crazy is if it was last week, we would have been there and we would have seen it. And then you and I would have been bawling at the gates. I just know we would have. We're like, let us in. We just wanna see the train. Take us on a grand circle tour.
And everything. Ding, 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 ding. And it was pulling in. Did you watch the video?
I didn't. I was at work when you posted it, so I wasn't able to watch it yet. Mickey Mouse himself has moved to a more friendly location for photos with guests during the Touch of Disney event. The famous mouse now makes appearances at the extended queue section of Ariel's Undersea Adventure. Previously, Mickey was in his conductor outfit up on the Silly Symphony Swings, which I have to say, that's where he was hanging out when we were there, and I geeked out seeing him in that outfit. I've never seen Mickey in his conductor outfit before, so I thought that was a little magical, even though you almost needed your binoculars to see him all the way up there, but still, very cool.
Well, we got to see him come out of the elevator at one point and leave, so that was pretty nice.
Perfect timing. That's what that was. Mm-hmm. That was absolute perfect timing.
What a great thing to use this extended queue for, because obviously it's not being used right now, but it's a little higher up, but not too high, and it's closer to people.
It's
so
perfect.
I think it's great.
Yeah, it's perfect, because now you can actually take your photo with Mickey and actually see that it's Mickey versus what, I mean, really, I don't think I saw anybody trying to take a photo with Mickey in the background just because he was too far away. I saw a lot of people zooming in and taking a photo of him and his friends, because I believe who else was up there? We had Daisy was up there. Minnie was up there. Mm-hmm. Pluto was hanging out over almost on Buena Vista Street, so he wasn't over there. But anyway, so I think it makes sense.
He's also wearing his typical like tuxedo outfit.
The classic, like, I don't know. To me, that's like classic.
Red, white, and yellow and black.
The other thing I think that's fun, too, is they have like some colorful banners draped over the edge too, so it's not like you're standing against cement with Mickey hovering above you. You have got this fun, and it's the same colors that they've used for the event, which I just need to say, I'm very bummed that we didn't have any sort of event merchandise. I understand why, because it was a very limited time, but the design and the color for Touch of Disney was wonderful. I'm glad that
they
we at least
sold a lot.
They would have. I'm glad that we did at least get a piece of it on our AP Legacy buttons.
The Lamplight Lounge has a secret drink menu. It's been around for a while, but the Disney Food Blog has a breakdown of all the options, as well as some of the lesser-known items on the menu. All of the drinks have fun Disney-like names and look beautiful. Did you look at you had?
I did, and I now know what I'm ordering the next time I go to Lamplight Lounge. I really want to try the Sea Witch.
That is also the one I want to try.
Yep. I knew about the Fun Wheel, which the Fun Wheel does look, well, fun. Vern had the Neverland Tea when we were there back when it was the Cove Bar. The zombie looks a little intense for me. Mm-hmm. I do think Melrose Place looks quite nice too, but man, when we got to the Sea Witch and I read that it has raspberry vodka, peach schnapps, blue curacao, and a splash of cranberry juice with Sprite. Yum. That sounds great. And beautiful. Plus, the Sea Witch. It's themed after Ursula. What is not to love?
Yeah. The only downside to all of these drinks, and when we were there for Touch of Disney, it was the same thing because community manager Kate was with us and she ordered a couple drinks. And each of her drinks were like $14 a piece. And these are in that same price range. The Sea Witch, for example, is $14. Mm-hmm. So for the size of a drink, it's pretty pricey, but I mean, it looks gorgeous.
It's for the experience. It's for the experience. Well, Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen Express has come out with yet another new beignet creation. This time, it's Bananas Foster's Glazed Beignets. The variation comes in a 4-pack with a vanilla bean crumb anglaise dipping sauce. The beignets are covered in a banana rum glaze and topped with a cinnamon sugar dust, topped off then again with a caramel drizzle.
This has a lot to it.
It does.
I like the idea of a Bananas Foster's one. To me, it seems like there might be a lot going on here because we did try, what was the one we tried when we were there?
The Snickerdoodle beignets.
Yeah, the Snickerdoodle beignets, they were okay. I thought that the regular, for me, I'm very plain. I like the regular beignet.
The Snickerdoodle beignets, they were nice. I did like them. And honestly, I think our Snickerdoodle beignets were cooked better than our regular beignets were because they were fluffed. They were just lighter and fluffier.
Sure.
Maybe they were fresher. I don't know. What's interesting to me with this is not only do you have a caramel drizzle, but you also have a dipping sauce. I've never dipped a beignet. So I feel like a drizzle with a dip might be a little bit too rich for me, but I'm with you. Very excited that it's a Bananas Foster and like for some reason, banana and beignet just make sense to me.
I can see that. Two things to note at Downtown Disney this week. First, you can buy a refillable mug at Wetzel's for $14.99, which includes a drink. You can then bring it back for a free refill with additional refills for just $1. What a deal. The other is a corn dog that contains a pickle with a hot dog inside of it. You can pick one of those up at Blue Ribbon Corn Dogs. I've seen this all over the internet this week, this pickle corn dog.
It's crazy. So to me, the pickle corn dog, that's fine. Like that's not what's like controversial about it for me. It's the fact that it comes with a side of peanut butter to dip into. I just can't wrap my head around
all
hot dog,
flavors.
Pickle, I think it's a panko like breading with peanut butter. I can get on board with just the like the hot dog, the pickle, and the breading. I can get on board with that. That sounds pretty good. Maybe a little, I don't know, ketchup or something. But peanut butter, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it. What do you think?
I don't know. The idea of biting into a corn dog, which my brain is so used to being one particular way,
sure,
and then having a pickle in there just seems a little strange. But I was trying to imagine a pickle and a hot dog, and those are okay flavors, kind of like relish on my stuff. With the corn dog, I was like, you know, this might be one of those things that sounds really weird, but then when you taste it, is good. So I would give it a try.
Would you dip it in the peanut butter, though?
I would try it. For sure.
Yeah.
But I also think it's a little dubious.
It's just, I don't know. But, you know, I've heard of pickles and peanut butter, like people doing that flavor combination before. So don't knock it till you try it, I guess. The other thing to note with this, too, I kind of wish we would have known about this when we were there. I don't know if it actually had, if it was available when we were there. Because I would have tried it just because it's so crazy. It's just not so crazy, but it's just so different. But it's The photos I've seen of this thing look massive. So think of the size of your normal corn dog. This thing, the pickle that's inside of it is not like a pickle slice next to a corn dog. Oh, no. It is your typical Disneyland pickle that they've hollowed out and put the hot dog inside of. That's huge. Like, I feel like I would need a fork and knife to eat this.
That's what I was thinking about, too, was the fact that you know, the Disney corn dogs in general are large anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, you got one at the end of Touch of Disney, and I just remember going, man, these are kind of large. So it's just one of those things, I guess. But I don't know. Yeah, the fact that it has to be big enough to fit a hot dog, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on with one item.
A lot. I feel like this is definitely something to, like, try out with your friends, because maybe eating one of these on your own might be too much. It just sounds like a lot of food. Well, Disneyland launched quite the PR campaign almost 2 weeks ago now, but we wanted to make sure that we learned more about it before we discussed it on the show. It was a little delayed by our trip to California as well. Of course, we're talking about Disneyland Forward, which is the name of this campaign. And while initially people thought it was plans for an expansion, it really is just a vague representation of what they could do if Anaheim will approve the rezoning into more of a mixed-use area. This, you know, we, like everyone, this news broke and we instantly got excited about all the possibilities. But then, yeah, the more you kind of look through it, it's Disney trying to, like, I feel like it's Disney testing the waters and saying, this is what we're thinking. How do you feel?
Yeah, so their website is really interesting. It's really well done, first of all.
Yeah,
Disney website, it's very lightweight, which is great, because usually their websites are full of a bunch of stuff. And what's interesting is they have, like, kind of a history, so you can go to 1955 mm-hmm. to today, which kind of talks about how the resort has impacted the area. They have a limitations, which is talking about, like, why they're trying to do this, because they're limited, and then what the possibilities are. And again, that's where, like, a lot of the concept art and stuff comes from, is they've used a lot of concept art they've had with other lands and stuff that they're building around the world at other Disney parks. They emphasize, like, these are the types of things we could do in this space if we were able to do that. That doesn't mean that that's what they are doing. So, like, they have a Zootopia land and a Frozen land and all this stuff. That doesn't mean that that's what they're building. That's just saying these are the types of projects we could do. So it's really interesting that they're kind of showing off that thing. And again, it's possibilities to get people excited. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, they go through and they kind of talk about what the problems are and everything. And they want to make a huge case saying they are not trying to get tax dollars to do any of this. They're not even trying to, like, buy or obtain more land. All they're trying to do is the way that the uses are approved for the different plots of land in Anaheim, they have to be used for that. So anybody who's familiar with, like, city zone planning or anything like that, the basics are some areas of your town are, you know, cordoned off, and they're like, this is residential, this is medium density residential, this is high density, so things like apartment buildings, you know, this is zoned for industrial or, you know, commercial. So only those types of things should be built in those areas. And the Disneyland Resort kind of has a mishmash of all of this stuff. So mm-hmm. a lot of the stuff, for instance, the biggest plot of land that Disney has around their park is parking. And those right now are listed as parking districts. So they can only be used for parking or transportation. They can't be used for theme park or hotel or retail dining and entertainment. But if you look at their website, they have a whole layout of how the things are set up now and how all that worked and what it looked like previously, what it looks like now, and what they're kind of trying to get the possibilities are for the future. And of course, they threw in some really generic, people have tried to look and read the tea leaves of what all this is, but they just kind of showed, like, this is what it could look like if we just kind of mocked up something and threw it there. They also have the Toy Story parking lot, which is where cast members park now, that they want to possibly do some type of retail dining experience thing over there. Originally, that was supposed to be a third gate, but they're looking at it as more of like another downtown Disney, kind of Disney Springs area. It looks like they're reigniting the interest that they have to do the Eastern Gateway project, but it sounds like they're going to modify it a little bit, so it's going to include a lot of those businesses on Harbor, so you're not going to have to worry about that they're kind of getting left out, or you have to go around the long way, which was the original Eastern Gateway project had a lot of that problem. So the other cool, interesting thing that I don't know how this would work is it looks like they are connecting Disneyland and California Adventure to these themed areas over by the hotels, which of course would have to go over Disneyland Drive, which I don't think is insurmountable because you've already got that section of downtown Disney that goes over, and you don't even realize you're going over the road unless you're really paying attention. But my question is, where does that connect to the parks if they do something like that? So California Adventure, it looks like it's kind of around the Emotional Whirlwind area, kind of somehow connects. And then Disneyland, it looks like maybe somewhere in Frontierland, maybe where the train station is, kind of goes over. I'm not sure. So the whole idea of this is just really interesting what they want to do. I hope that they've gathered enough positive, you know, stuff, especially after the pandemic, where they've realized how important Disney is to the Anaheim community financially and jobs wise and everything for the economy there. So I'm hoping that people will be in favor of this and can kind of rezone it to a mixed use so Disney can make plans to do something in the future.
Yeah, so Tag covered a lot of that. So the only thing I wanted to add was basically the thing that is so exciting to me about this, of course, yes, is the, you know, potential of what all this area has. But I do think it was really interesting and very helpful that Disney did put together this really well done website. Again, we will have the link in our show notes, but it is just DisneylandForward.com. Because a lot of times people say stuff like, oh, well, they've got that over there. Why don't they just do this with it? So this kind of explains why they can't just poof,
make, I didn't know, the toys, that either.
Yeah, you know, poof, make this into that, or poof, make this into this other thing. So it was really interesting to know, and that explains why Disney, because I always wondered why there were so many surface lots in Disneyland, since they are limited with space. Why are you, quote unquote, wasting all of that space for parking stalls when you could just build like a parking structure and have more cars in a smaller space? But seeing this map and seeing these visuals really helped explain that for me. And I just found it really interesting. The other thing I thought interesting too, like the 90s uses and approval was, so back in the 90s, of course, we only had Disneyland, and then we had across the street where DCA is now, Disneyland parking. So that's the other reason I think people get a little confused, because we did turn a surface lot into a brand new park. But if you look at what the zoning was, the parking lot was in an area that was zoned for theme park. So that's why they were able to poof do that. The other thing that is super cool to me is that they are being very, very open about this, and they're inviting the community to be a part of this conversation. A lot of times I feel like the Disney kind of does stuff behind closed doors, makes all these big plans, and then say, hey, everyone, look what we're going to do. You know, so I think it's very cool that they're sending out mailers to the community to try and explain what's going on, and that they're really trying to work with the city and the community to update all of this and to kind of better utilize the space, explain where they're coming from, and just work together instead of working against each other. A while back, we did an episode devoted to the struggles between Disneyland and the city of Anaheim. So I think that this is a really great foot for Disney to kind of lead with, especially after all the awful terribleness that we've all had to go through with this pandemic and having that area shut down and closed for so long. So I think this is a great step in the right direction, and I am thrilled to see what's going to come of this. Nothing's going to happen tomorrow. I think we all know that, but still, it's still very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of possibilities. I mean, that's like their whole thing, possibilities. And it was surprising to me, and again, this goes along with what I keep saying, which is Disney always seems to wait a really long time after, you know, a financial crisis. Then they start spending money on cool new park things. And the fact that we're not even out of this one and they're already looking to the future, I think is really great.
Yeah. The other thing, it's just crazy to me, and I just have to keep like pinching myself. I never really, as much as I like hoped and dreamed and was wishing upon all of the stars, I would absolutely love to have a third park at Disneyland. But I really never thought it was possible because, right, Disneyland's very landlocked. There's not too much space for them to be able to expand. And even if they were to buy up some areas near them, it would take quite a bit of property buying up to create a space for a third park. So the fact that there is all this potential in land that they already own is just crazy exciting to me.
Now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer Vern will try to stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to ask us four questions, maybe a bonus. We'll attempt to answer, and we'll get the correct answer after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, Vern?
Well, Tag, we are going to take another trip into the wonderful land of the listener or listener submitted questions. We are always very thankful for all of those wonderful listeners that give us these wonderful questions to try to stump you with. So we're going to dive straight into it with a question submitted by listener Jill M. As you enter the temple on Indiana Jones, look to the right. There is a painting of a god with jewels. What color is the jewel in the center of the headdress?
Oh my goodness.
Red.
How confident are you, Teresa?
I'm not confident. That's just my gut reaction is red.
Okay. I'm going to say blue. But it's totally a guess.
You know, that's a great question, Jill, because I just blaze past that because I'm so excited to get into the queue. I just whoop, go.
Yeah.
Longtime listeners would know this, but some people may not have picked up on this. Indiana Jones, always the first ride to run straight to. Mm-hmm. So they're very excited, just got into the park, not paying any attention to anything. So Jill, perfect question. Very well chosen.
Definitely.
So that's your final guesses?
That's it.
Yep.
Red and blue.
Excellent. All right. Second question submitted by listener Whitney N. Who bought the first ticket to Disneyland and for how much?
Oh, it was Roy.
Technically, it was Roy and it was $1.
Yep.
But wasn't there actually a child that bought, like some little kid bought the first? Somebody else bought the actual first one, but he bought ticket number one.
Yeah. But I don't know who that is. So I'm
it was a dollar. Right. Yeah, it was a dollar. Yeah, it was for sure. We actually just saw the first ticket.
That's true.
Ticket number at Bowers.
Mm-hmm. That's my answer. I'm just going to say Roy for a dollar.
Yeah, I second that.
Final answer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Question number three, submitted by listener Donna S. What Disney employee created the wishing well seen on the side of the castle at Disneyland with the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves?
Was it the same guy who has the Christmas tree right there? Like, didn't they put a Christmas tree over there and that was like a big thing? That was another trivia question I thought at one time. I don't know though.
I don't remember either. I remember the whole process of it because they were gifted the figures, the porcelain figures of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and they had to get creative and use the Force perspective. Because Snow White was the same size as the Seven Dwarfs, but I don't remember who that was.
Me either. Donna S. sends in a lot of trivia, and she's very good at stumping
Good trivia, too. Good stumper, Donna. We're stumped. That's our final answer.
That's your final answer?
Yep.
You're stumped. Okay. And your fourth regular question submitted by listener Quincy K. Who composed the music to the ride Space Mountain?
I'm just going to go crazy and say something like Aerosmith.
That's the Rock and Roller Coaster.
Yeah.
Wrong park.
AC/DC. I don't know. It seems like it'd be crazy like that.
I don't think you're too far off. I don't think it was AC/DC or.
Do you want my dumb answer? That's totally not correct. Randy Newman.
Oh, jeepers. There you go. This is bothering. Good questions today, all of the listeners, but this one in particular, Quincy. We talked about this. I remember researching this and talking specifically about the music
with Space Mountain, right?
Yes, I remember. I remember talking about it, but I don't know who it was. It was somebody. I want to say it was something like more current kind of a thing. It wasn't like a typical. Oh, I write music for Disney attractions type person. It wasn't the Sherman Brothers or something like that. But I don't know. Dang it. I don't remember the name.
Yeah, I don't know.
I remember that it was supposed to be like kind of a surfing feel to it. That like the music was very intentional. It was actually really interesting to read about.
Was it the Beach Boys, was it?
No, I don't think so.
Because they did kind of surfery sounding kind of.
And for your bonus,
which we need
in Heimlich's Choo Choo Train, What food items did you pass?
Candy corn.
Yep. Watermelon. Carrots.
There is carrots. There was also the box of animal crackers.
Yes. There was also some like the peppermint candies that had
peppermint candies.
Yep.
Okay.
Was there Brussels sprouts or broccoli? Might have been broccoli. I know carrots because that's one of my favorite lines. They say carrots are good for your eyes, but I don't want to put carrots in my eyes. And then the watermelon, I remember because it would like squirt on you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You'd like drive through the watermelon tunnel.
That's all I remember, but we're probably missing something, but maybe not.
I think so, but...
Okay. Well, listeners, did Tag and Teresa get the right answers? How about you listening at home? Do you think you got the right answers? Keep listening after the discussion topic to find out.
I guarantee you we didn't.
Well, for this week, we're actually going to continue discussing what we did on our trip. So last week, we left off right before we were going back. Literally, we stopped recording right before we got in line to go back into Touch of Disney for our second day. Our second day was, oh my gosh, it was wonderful. First off, the weather was much more mild, so it was more enjoyable. We didn't have kind of an afternoon lull where all we just desperately wanted was shade and cold drinks.
Yes.
The weather was great. I want to say it was, what, maybe upper 70s, lower 80s mm-hmm. type area. But the other thing that we decided to do for this day too is we decided that we wanted to focus, because we got distracted, go figure, focus more on experiencing the festival and kind of doing all the little things that weren't food. So we made sure to stop and check out all as many photo pass spots as we could. We did some photo op things right away in the beginning, more shopping, just kind of had a more leisurely day. And it wasn't just run to all the different food booths. Of course, we did do that at the end of the night because we just wanted to eat all the food before one last time before we had to leave. So anyways, that's just kind of a brief little thing. We're also going to talk a little bit about our time at the Boysenberry Festival at Knott's. And then we also will just wrap up with our last day, which was really, you know, it was really special. We didn't have a true plan on what we wanted to do the last day. The only thing we knew for sure was that we wanted to get Butterbeer. But on our way to Butterbeer, we actually did a little like Walt Disney the Man history tour and got to check out some spots that were very, you know, very important to Walt and of course also to Disney.
I can't wait till we talk about that because that was pretty cool. So we recorded, like Teresa said, we recorded our episode last week, like sitting in the Esplanade, which I think we've gotten a lot of feedback that you guys enjoyed that. So we're glad that you enjoyed that little bit of, you could hear the music in the background and everything. It was great.
I need to like be a nerd and tell all of you this. We picked a planter and I looked and I got all excited because there was a speaker right behind me. And so I'm like, Tag, this is perfect. They're going to get the Esplanade music. It's right there. And so there's a couple times when Tag was talking that I just turned around and like put my microphone closer to the speaker. Only Disney nerds, right? Only Disney nerds would do something like that.
That's all right. Everybody enjoyed it. So the first thing we did when we got into the park for the second day of Touch of Disney is we went and did some photo pass stuff and took some photos at the different like photo op. Yeah, so we got some photo pass photos of us at the Storyteller statue on Buena Vista Street, which was great to see. You know what I didn't notice and I didn't take the chance to look at and I feel kind of bad now is they just refurbished these and we didn't even like think about it.
Oh, that's why I wanted that photo pass so bad was because I knew it was a newly cleaned and refurbished statue and ooh, do they look good. They look great. We have a photo, you and I, at the Storyteller statue from D23 and we'll have to do like a side by side so you can really see the difference. But man, it looks great. And like how it looked in the sun, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice, and the photo pass line wasn't too long, which was great. We went over down to Hollywood Boulevard, because we didn't really do that the first day at all. We kind of got there later. We didn't really do much over there. So they had a great little photo op with Tinkerbell and Sleeping Beauty Castle. And so the group of us, by the way, just to be clear, we, in the morning, it was me and Teresa, one of our supporters, Deanne, who will be in our stories a lot because she was so gracious enough to drive us around when we weren't at the parks. And we walked with her. She came down by herself and she wanted people to walk back and forth to the hotel with her for safety. So we did. So she was around us a lot. Also, Liberty, one of our supporters, was there too, and we all kind of hung out for a little bit on this second day. But yeah, this is a cute photo op. I just didn't know. It was funny because I don't think you did either, knew how to like pose with this one.
No. You know what? It was funny because everybody like in line around us wasn't exactly sure how to pose with this either. It, you know, it was fun. It was an unexpected little photo op. You did go through this. You had to go through this line to then get back to the WandaVision photo op. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a fun little surprise, but it was cute. It was a really nice backdrop, but yeah, it was just a little, we weren't quite sure how to pose with it. The other thing that was working against us too was the time of day we were there. We were all looking into the sun, yeah, as we stood at it, so that made it a little bit more difficult, but it was still fun.
We went around the corner and we did the WandaVision photo op, which was really cute. We took some photos through the televisions. And then, of course, for those of you that have Apple devices, if you have an iPhone and an Apple Watch, you can actually bring up the watch or the camera on your watch. And so that's a great way to take these when you don't have somebody that can take them. So they didn't have a PhotoPass photographer that could do it. Again, contacting, different things, that kind of thing, social distancing, all that. So we set it on the little display. There was a little slot there for it, and we took a picture. And I love this picture. We took a normal, like us sitting there, but then we took a goofy picture. And this picture is actually my phone background now because it's just such a fun picture of us having a great time at Disneyland.
You know, the other, I just really, I think that they need to do this at all photo ops. I think they need to have some little station where you can prop your phone up and you can, you know, take a photo of your, a group photo on your own, or set, at least set a timer or something like that. Cause it worked out really mm-hmm. great. I hope this is something that continues. So after our WandaVision photo op, I don't remember which one we did first, but we did go then check out the backlot. So if you guys remember the backlot, that is that big shopping area that they have in the Hollywood backstage backlot.
To be clear, the backlot premiere shop.
Oh, yes, the backlot premiere shop located over by the Monsters, Inc. Mm-hmm. attraction. We went and checked that out, which perfect time of the day because I think we were the only people in the shop. So we had the whole area to ourselves. There was also some shopping outside of the backlot premiere shop. Also, side note, we did notice things at the backlot premiere shop and the outdoor vending area that we did not notice other places. In fact, Tag purchased a sweatshirt for James there that was the only place we saw that sweatshirt. Yeah. So
they had a lot of unique merchandise in there.
They did. So if shopping's your thing, be sure to go check out that kind of lesser known corner, because everybody, I think, just goes to, well, and we're guilty of it too. You just go to the big shops like World of Disney or like the Five and Dime, because a lot of those shops do have repeats and you're able to find the same thing over and over again. So it was a nice surprise to find unique new merchandise back in that area. There's also a new Falcon and the Winter Soldier photo op that's over kind of by that stage area in the backlot area. It was really cool. Honestly, just looking at this backdrop, this photo op was pretty fun. It was, again, a little, we weren't quite sure how to pose with it, because what it is you've got the Captain America shield in the middle, and then you've got the Falcon's wings kind of coming off the shield. So to stand, you'd think that you'd stand with the wings, but then you're covering the shield. So anyways, we just had fun with it and tried all sorts of different things and just were kind of crazy and weird with it, which, right, we were having fun. But I think we got some fun photos and good photos out of it.
Yeah, I think the trick for this one is don't try to do both. Just take a picture with you in front doing the wings and then reposition to do the shield if you want to, because there's not really a good way to get both. I took a picture. It was kind of funny. I just leaned on the shield with the wigs. I also took some wig pictures, but it's a cool little photo op. They also have the screens on the stage have some stuff from Falcon and the Winter Soldier, yeah, which was also kind of neat, but there's no show or anything there.
So then after we stepped out of that area, which we'll admit it is a little far, like we walked past the exit and didn't realize we walked past it. It's kind of a little sneak exit off to the side, but you do exit back onto Buena Vista Street. We did, again, there was another PhotoPass photographer, so we stopped. This time there was no line, so we stopped and got our photos taken kind of like right in front of the Hyperion Theater as our backdrop, and of course the very nicely redone sky wall. That wall looked great. The last time we were there, it was very faded and the clouds just didn't really look realistic. Now it's very realistic. It looks great. So we headed over there. And then by that time, it was our mobile order for our Bengal beef skewers. So then we went over to the Cocina Cucamonga and picked up. This was the second day that we did beef skewers. We kind of cheated. There were a couple things that we did repeats on. I don't know. Tag thankfully had a better experience than I did. But both days, my beef skewers were just not up to the normal par that I expect them to be when I get them from the Bengal barbecue. The first day, I had a piece, the pieces of meat was really like gristly and fatty. And then the other two pieces were not very warm. And then this time, thankfully, I didn't have a gristly piece again. But again, they didn't taste very fresh and very warm like we're used to in Disneyland. So I'm still looking forward to the day that I can get my Bengal beef skewer from Bengal barbecue.
The tip I have for this is they allow you to buy a little thing of sauce with it for, I think it was like 59 or 69 cents. Mm-hmm. I would definitely recommend that, especially if you're a sauce person. I'm a sauce person. So even when I was done with the beef, I was like taking my fork and eating the sauce because it was so good. I mean, it's my favorite thing about it. So that's what I would recommend, especially considering the fact that it is so inexpensive to get this extra thing of sauce, especially for Disney prices. You know, 59 or 69 cents is nothing.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that we learned from the first day that we did a lot on the second day is when it's warm out, you should definitely ask for a cup of ice and a cup of water because they will give you those for free and you can put them in your water bottle if you have one or something like that. And that was very nice. So you didn't have to spend a lot of money buying a bunch of bottles of water where you could just get free water and free ice from them. And that the thing with the ice is really great too, because obviously it's going to melt and keep everything cold and make more water. So that was great.
So after our Bengal beef skewers, we decided to go head out to Pixar Pier. I think the plan was that we wanted to go play some of the games because we were very excited and we didn't get to play those the first day. They were testing the Incredicoaster when we were back there, so that was pretty darn exciting. The other plan, too, was we needed to get our Lamplight Lounge coins that we had forgotten to buy when we were at the Lamplight Lounge the previous day. So while we were back there, we did do they had a Buzz Lightyear photo op, which was pretty fun. That one did have a little bit of a wait, but well worth it while we were standing there watching the Incredicoaster go whizzing by overhead. We did not do the games. Our plan was to come back later to try the games because there was quite a wait. So word got out that the Pixar Pier games were up and running, that they were free to play at that time. I don't believe this was going on when we were there, but since then, so if you go play the games, they are now handing out buttons, and they're Disneyland 65th buttons that they're handing out now as prizes. I don't think that was happening when we were there because I did not see anybody wearing them. They're pretty awesome buttons. I feel like people would have been wanting to show them off. But we did have a weekly tier go this past weekend and was talking about the buttons. So I was pretty jealous because I really want one of those buttons. You know,
to answer the question we had about do you get something for playing? Yeah. That's what you get.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we went into Bing Bong's and we got our coins. I will say, keep an eye on the coins when you do buy them because we bought a couple sets and there was definitely a little bit of a quality difference between the couple different sets. So if you really care, just look at it. If you're trying to collect them for like a collector's piece, that kind of thing. It wasn't that big of an important thing for us. By the way, I think, do you have mine, Teresa? Mm-hmm. Okay, because, yeah. So we went through there.
And I have your JPL stuff.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so we went in there. We looked around. Of course, Bing Bong Shop is always great. And we got some cake pops. And we tried the
There was the one that we shared was the Wilderness Explorer or the Russell cake pop, which was a chocolate cake pop dipped in white chocolate. And then, of course, like it was adorable. I think actually that was our thing for social media today was those cake pops. They had the Russell or the Wilderness Explorer cake pop. And there was also a Doug cake pop. What are you laughing about?
I'm laughing at the fact that I'm looking at these pictures and I'm remembering that it had like fallen apart and I had to like shove the rest of it in my mouth in one bite.
And there was also a Doug cake pop that was a vanilla cake inside. And then it had like a sugar coating on the outside for Doug's fur. I thought that was kind of clever. Mm-hmm. Very cute. Very photo worthy. Oh my gosh. I'm going through my photos and I forgot about the tacos. We had the Bengal beef skewers and I tried the tacos back at Cocina Cucamonga, which was on one of my, like, it was my must try list. There was a potato taco and then there was also like a marinated beef taco. You do get two tacos at once. So I did decide to do one potato and one of the marinated beef tacos. I will say of the two, beef. Oh, so good. So moist, so juicy. Great flavor combination. To me, the potato one was good, but it needed a sauce. It was a little dry. So I would have been really happy if there was some sort of like crema drizzle or sour cream or some sort of sauce.
You know what part of my problem is with this recollecting time? You never shared these photos into the Touch of Disney album, so I don't have any of your taco pictures or anything. So then after that, we went over and we took a big, nice picture next to the Pixar Pier, like backstage gate that was really fun.
I always forget about these fun, like, Instagram walls slash really their gates to backstage. This one's cool because it's over kind of by the Silly Symphony swings. And it's just got it's basically just a big Pixar ball that then says Pixar Pier. So very fun, very classic photo to get. Yeah, so then after we got our photos taken, we stopped over by the AP Legacy Corner and picked up a set of magnets and buttons again. And then, of course, we're at a food festival, so it had been a little while since we had eaten. We'd walked all the way across the pier. I don't know how we made it without stopping for more nourishment other than cake pops. But we decided it was time to try something new. So we actually went over, and we got stuff from a couple different places. We went to the Trattoria, which we ordered. This worked out to our advantage. We ordered the tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwich famous at the Jolly Holiday, of course. But when we received our order, we actually had a like little mini meatball sub instead of our soup and sandwich. So Tag went back up and said, oh, you know, actually this wasn't our order. So they let us keep it was actually, I think it was an impossible meatball sub.
Yes.
They let us keep that and gave us our correct order. So we got to try two things there by accident.
The sandwich and the soup were really good.
The sandwich and the soup were amazing. It was kind of weird because I always like to get that when it's like cooler. So it was a little strange having that in the middle of the day when it was hot, warmer outside. My only complaint was I needed more sandwich for my soup because I really like dipping the sandwich in the soup and eating the soup that way. So it was a good sized portion.
And then I had mobile ordered, what was that drink, Teresa? You're good at all the names and things.
So the drink that I was on my list of things to try was over at one of the Cozy Cones, and it was the Pear of Dice Soda.
That's what it
beautiful,
was.
Beautiful, beautiful drink. We had to take a picture of it because it was this bright, so like, purpley color. So crisp, so refreshing. It was pear soda, basically. Super good. I'm very glad that we...
Would you say it was the best drink you had at the event?
It was one of my favorite drinks that we had at the event. The Pear of Dice Soda, as well as the that Strawberry Rose Lemonade.
Oh, yes.
That we had on the first day was at
Golden
excellent.
Dreams.
Yeah, it was also excellent. Those are my two favorite drinks from the event.
Yeah, this one was really great. So we grabbed that. I came back. We ate. It was wonderful.
I will side note our bonus meatball sub that was the impossible meatball sub. That was actually really good. Really good.
It was. So at what time was it? At 6 o'clock? 6:15? I don't know what we did between eating there and then eating at the Carthay. Yeah, so we got some reservations at Carthay Circle, and I had been wanting to try the tacos there, so I was very excited for this. They had outdoor seating. I actually thought the area that is, was this like a queue area for the Playhouse Disney area? That's what I think it was.
I think so,
it was set up nice. It was set up really nice.
It was. While there, we did try the Vietnamese twice-cooked beef tacos with pineapple mint salsa. delicious. I think that was the favorite. Good. Yeah, that was definitely the favorite.
They are smaller, though, just so people know. They are. They're not a normal size taco.
And they had a crunchy shell, too. The tacos that we had earlier in the day from Cocina Cucamonga had a softer shell, and these were like a more crunchy shell. We also tried the duck confit empanada. They were good, but they were a little dry inside. So they needed a little, I don't know, sauce, a little extra moisture, something else.
They were pretty good.
They were good, but they weren't.
They had a couple sauces.
They weren't as good as those tacos. We kind of realized, ooh, we should have gotten two of the tacos. And then the other thing we tried
was like the shrimp spring roll. And that was also pretty good. The only thing I didn't like about it was everything that was in the spring roll was juicy, so it was kind of a soggy kind of texture, but it was very, like, the flavors were good. It was just kind of a weird soggy texture. What was the drink we got?
They don't have it on here.
Dang.
You got like a...
I took pictures.
Shirley Temple.
I got a Shirley Temple because I haven't had a Shirley Temple in a long time, and it was very good. And like I Teresa had... Said,
mine was some sort of like berry lemonade thing.
Mm-hmm. Which was also pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And it was pretty.
It was pretty. Those tacos were good, but like I said, they were a little small, but I love the pineapple with them and everything. After Carthay, we left and went over to Off the Page and looked around, and Teresa was on her hunt for the pin. Do you want to explain the pin collection?
Yes, again? I have a new obsession, specifically with pins. We all know I have an obsession with ears, which I need to confess something. I don't know how. But I went to Disneyland Resort and did not buy a set of ears. I'm a little disappointed in myself. And I will also confess,
it was like amazing.
There was one set of ears that I had my eye on. I really want the Sorcerer Mickey ears that they have, and they've been out for a little while now. But the plan was the last day on Thursday night when we went back to Downtown Disney, we were going to end the night at World of Disney. Well, we got our times mixed up. We thought that Downtown Disney was open until 9. Well, they were actually only open until 8. So we didn't get to go back to World of Disney. So that would have been when I picked those ears up. But it was probably better for my suitcase that I didn't have another set of ears that I tried to bring home. But that's crazy, though. I haven't gone to a Disney park since we started the podcast and not come home with one set of ears. So it's a little weird. Anyways, but what I did come home with was pins. Lots and lots and lots of pins. I've recently become aware of the hidden Mickey or the hidden Disney pins that used to be things that you would only get from cast members. So when you'd have to trade to get them, but they have now made it so that you can buy them in these little blind packs, and they're like 2-packs. Well, once I learned that they have a collection that you can get that are the Disneyland D's with different characters, I was sold. I was hooked. I was sold. So I was being a crazy person and checking out and trying to see if I could feel in the packages and see if I could feel the outline of that Disneyland D, because those are the ones that I was on the hunt for. So I did get 2 of them. I think we bought like 4 packages of pins. And of the 4 packages of pins, I did find 2 pins that had that or 2 packs that did contain the Disneyland D pin. So I was pretty pumped. So two ones that I'm going to keep for sure, and then I've got a few that I know are going to be traders. And I did get this really cool Iron Man pin, actually, from when I bought or when we got the pins at Off the Page. Really cool Iron Man pin that I might have to keep too.
So again, it's a food festival. So after we did all of that stuff and kind of walked around for a little bit, we went over to Smoke Jumpers because I wanted to get the Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of interesting because while I was in line, there was a lot of bounding people. And
there
we have
was.
Photos. I'll try to put these in the show notes. But there was a family that was, there was a lady in an electric convenience vehicle that was Roz. And then there was the wife, I assume it's the wife, that was mm-hmm. looks like Sully. And then this, the guy that looked, what's his name with the sock?
It's the monster that has the 2319, yes. Mm-hmm. I think his name's like something like Bob or something.
Yeah. He's got this orange shirt on, and then he like glued like a sock on his, it was great. And then at the same time, we ran into a set of 3 people that made up the Fix It Felix and Wreck-It Ralph crew. So their whole setup was also very good. I thought that it was good. So for the Monte Cristo, I've never had a Monte Cristo before. However, I don't normally like ham, but this was really, really good. And it was only a half portion, they say. I thought this was a perfect portion size. And the berry sauce they had with it was amazing. I would definitely, when we get back and in normal times, I'm definitely going to get a regular Monte Cristo because I want to know what the normal size is. But this was very good. I know now why people recommend it, and I also recommend it.
You know, I'm not a big fan of ham, and I'm not a big fan of Swiss cheese. So there's two things working against me for the Monte Cristo sandwich. But yes, I agree. The breading, the jam. I don't think I could do a whole one, but it was great to have a taste of.
So then we went over to Carsland because the first time we missed the light up ceremony. So we went over there, and whatever time sunset is when they do this, just for future reference. So for us, it was at 7:10. So we went over there and hung out, and it's great because they switch the music, they play different music, and everything starts to light up, and it was great. I have a video, I'll think about posting it somewhere, that it's the whole light-up ceremony, and then Deanne and Teresa are kind of dancing with the music. It was very cute.
It was so much fun. This is just one of those things that I had never experienced before, and didn't know quite what the hype was about it, but I'm really glad that we just happened to be there because we went over there. We decided to go get a photo in front of the Carsland sign. So we had a photo pass photographer, and I think Liberty wanted her own pair of diced soda. So we went over there for that as well. But it was so much fun. I kind of think I might have to make it a point when I'm in DCA at sunset to try and make my way over there because the atmosphere was just fun. It was just so much fun. The song that they play is the song that they cruise to in the movie Cars. Mm-hmm. It's that Life Would Be a Dream. It's just a fun, like, can't help but dance song.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Deanne and I. There were plenty of people around us, like, bopping around and dancing, too. It was just so much fun. The only thing that would have made it, like, extra magical is if they would have had, like, the cars driving down the road. Like during this too.
There was a lot of guests there, so it would have been difficult.
It was definitely the place to be at that time because that was probably the biggest, like, quote unquote crowd feeling that we had was during the lighting ceremony. But it was nice because everybody was still able to stay distant from each other and we all had our own little bubbles of space. Perfect.
Then we went and took a picture with Mater. Mater's parked in like a little area over by the Radiator Springs Racers attraction, kind of behind Flo's V8. So that was really nice. Took a couple pictures there and took some night pictures of the Cadillac Range.
Yes.
We went back over and took some beautiful photos of the Pixar Pier as well.
Yeah, so we decided to end the evening. This is where the day went wrong because all of a sudden we realized, oh no, we only have so much so much time left and there's still this many things that we had to eat. So we had mobile ordered things earlier in the day, but decided, oh, we'll just pick it up before, you know, we'll just push it off. Well, suddenly they all kind of came up at the same time. But for our final hour in the park, we we kind of mad rushed, but it was nice because we did a lap basically around the park. So we started in Carsland and then we walked through and around all of Pixar Pier, came back up. So we were able to get some really great shots on the pier. And then on the side of the World of Color viewing area, we were able to get some great shots across the lagoon and back onto the pier. We need to get another helping of the carbonara mac and cheese. So we walked over to the festival booth. What was it? Golden Dreams.
Golden Dreams.
Which then also took us and kind of wound us back around the Grizzly Peak area. So we were in that like wooded area. That was a little creepy because we were back there at night. The park was like close to closing. So we were the only ones back there and it was a little dark. So that was kind of cool because we literally had that corner of the park to ourselves. Mm-hmm. We stopped at Smoke Jumpers, grabbed one of the wonderful s'mores shakes.
That was surprisingly really good because we had read reviews that it wasn't that great. they were wrong.
It was great. I don't know. I think other people were expecting different flavors than what it had. So what it was a marshmallow flavored ice cream was the base of the shake. And then they had chocolate drizzled and then some graham cracker crumbs. They also had like a graham cracker crumb rim and they had pieces of graham crackers stuck on the top, topped the whole thing off with some whipped cream and chocolate chips and more chocolate sauce drizzle. So I think people, maybe there wasn't enough chocolate for some people. I don't know, but I really liked the marshmallow flavor of that ice cream.
It was very good.
And then the last thing we did was we picked up we of course could not be in a Disney park and not have a corn dog. So Tag went over and picked up a corn dog for everyone to share from Award Wieners. We were in the park after 8 o'clock because they actually had to like make fresh corn dogs for us. So we were in the park. It was a little strange because here we are waiting for our corn dog and security's trying to like move everyone towards the front gate. And we're like, we're going. We promise we just need our corn dog. So we did end up enjoying our corn dog back in downtown Disney.
Yeah. So I just want to bring this up because I hope none of our listeners will do this. And I know, Teresa, you're going to be like, don't put that in the podcast. But we went into World of Disney and there was a family right at the door and they had an entire tray of food from the event in World of Disney. It was all fried food. I don't know why they're not just eating it. But we were in World of Disney probably 30 to 40 minutes and we were checking out and they were near us at the checkout and they still have this plate of food like 40 minutes later. So just eat in downtown Disney. It's fine. You're going to be able to get into World of Disney.
I think they probably had the same thing happen that we did, was that we had all these things timed out. And what happened was we had all of our food timed out, but then since it was the end of the night, they just kind of pushed it. They didn't let you say, okay, I'm here, make my food. We just suddenly got a push notification saying, okay, your food's ready at this part. Yeah. So I wonder if they kind of had to do a mad rush to get and pick up all their food. And then somebody really needed to go do their shopping or I don't know. But yeah, I felt bad for the family because I'm like, the food's not going to be as good because it's going to be cold now. But
yeah.
Anyways. But anyway, so that was our day two of Touch of Disney. Overall, very fun event. Full disclosure, partway through the first day, Tag and I sat there and were like, maybe we didn't need to do 2 days. But then, honestly, I have zero regrets. This day two, day one was fun. Day two is a different type of fun. It felt a little bit more like loose and fancy free. We didn't feel like we had any restrictions and we 100% just went where the Disney winds took us. And it was just a ton of fun.
Well, I think the problem for us was the first day, because it was so hot.
Yes.
And it was a Sunday, so it wasn't Monday, which there was, even though it was fully booked, it felt less crowded on Monday. I think that it just was like a combination of things. Also, the fact that we hadn't already had one day under our belt, so we didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of stress and stuff and trying to get stuff done. So I agree with you that at the end of day one, I was like, I don't know if we need to do a second day, but I'm really glad we did because the second day just felt really relaxed and we really got to enjoy it. And we just took in California Adventure more than we did the first day.
Yes, exactly. So we're briefly going to talk about our next day, which was Knott's Berry Farm. Now, we know this is a Disneyland podcast, so we're not going to spend too much time on this. But it was just really, I don't know, it was really interesting to me. This was the first time I had been to Knott's Berry Farm ever. And it was interesting to do a food festival at Disney and then do a food festival at another theme park. We did see there were some things, you know, there were differences, good and bad. And just overall, just comparing the two parks to each other and the layouts and the feels and all of that. So, Tag, I know you had been to Knott's Berry Farm before. So what's your overall feel of the park?
I don't remember. Like, once we got there, I only remembered one very small part of the park. And
oh,
that was,
sure.
For me, it was the Calico Mine train. And that kind of like little limited area, there's a water flume attraction similar to Splash Mountain, not well themed, but that type of an attraction. And this like mine train attraction, which is not like Big Thunder. It's just kind of like it's more for all ages. And there's a lot of roller coasters and stuff there. What I thought was interesting overall for the park was I loved the old like ghost town, which is kind of in the front of the park. There's a lot of really good theming. They had a lot of characters out. mm-hmm. which was something I think Disneyland could have done a little bit better of. They could have had the Buena Vista Street people out and stuff like that. It did add a little bit of cool, like, interactivity. We had some great interactions. There was the mayor was out. We talked to Joe. What was his name? Sad Eye Joe.
Who
was
in the jail. Yep.
We talked to Lot. Oh, what was her name?
Lots of leftovers.
She was great. she made some stuff, was up in one of the things cooking. But it was cool. There was a section of the park that was like a craft fair, which was interesting, totally different than like a Disneyland. There was a whole back section of the park that was very, it seemed very like teenager, like roller coaster park, not mm-hmm. really themed that well, very warm when in the heat of the day.
Extreme roller coasters, yeah. too. We were walking by some of these things and we're like, how is that even possible?
Yeah. Camp Snoopy was wonderful. I think Camp Snoopy was my second favorite part of the park, yes. just because it was mm-hmm. themed really well. They had a lot of Easter stuff. There was a lot of trees and shade, which was beautiful. Overall, I want to go back when the park is open because I haven't been there for a long time. But I thought that the food event was done really well. I thought for the price and the amount of items you could get, I thought it was a great deal.
Mm-hmm, definitely. We did have some favorites there. We did really enjoy the Boysenberry Mai Tai. Another thing that I really, really was looking forward to and was only slightly disappointed in, that wasn't anyone's fault, but there... tamales. I love tamales. And they over in the Fiesta Village at the cantina there, they had a chef special tamale with a boysenberry roja sauce on Spanish rice. It was really, really good. My only complaint was the tamale was, I think it was a chicken filling that day, and the meat to like sauce or goo ratio inside just wasn't quite what I liked, but I really, the boysenberry roja sauce, so good. So good.
The only disappointment that I had was one of the first things I got, I'm a big macaron fan. We had this mm-hmm. great macaron, and it was like one of the first things we bought. It was amazing. The first one was just amazing. So, of course, later I bought a second one because I'm like, I need more macaron. And the second time wasn't as good. So yeah. I'm not sure exactly why or what, how that came about, but the macaron was good. We also ate a lot more sweets at this event than we did at Disney.
They just, their menu seemed to have a lot more sweets than the Disney Touch of Disney menu did. Mm-hmm. Another favorite for me was... we tried the boysenberry cucumber and pineapple agua fresca. That was really, really good. Yes. I think that was our first beverage that we tried that day. We also did have, what all did we have? We had a brisket mac and cheese. That was mm-hmm. pretty good. And then I think we can both agree that one of our favorites of the whole day was they had a corn chowder that we ended yes. our evening with. That was
that
very,
was
very tasty.
So tasty. I had like a shrimp taco at one point, which was pretty okay. Deanne, who was with us, had this. Was that the Mai Tai? Were you talking
that
about
that? That was the Mai Tai.
That was so good. Really refreshing. Didn't taste like alcohol at all. The Dippin' Dots, the boysenberry Dippin' Dots, were also very mm-hmm. good, especially as it kind of sat for a little bit and became less frozen because I think the flavor really intensified. That was great. I'm trying to think.
Ooh, we should have had this. There was a boysenberry mashed potato bowl with grilled chicken and corn.
So the one definitely steer away from don't eat was the hot dog.
That was a little weird.
Kate and her daughter ordered, and it was a purple bun with a boysenberry relish, which literally was relish that had boysenberry in it.
Yeah,
so it tasted it
was,
like relish.
It was a little different.
It wasn't that great.
We also tried a cheesecake that had boysenberry sauce. And then we also had, I did really like the boysenberry key lime tart as well. Very good. I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we experienced it. To me, that didn't seem quite like a two-day event.
No.
Because it did. The park is, of course, smaller. And I'm with Tag. I really, my favorite part of the park was the ghost town. Second favorite area was Camp Snoopy. I do think having the actors or the face characters there was a nice touch. How do I want to say this? So Disneyland had a lot of characters out and about. So we saw Goofy and Max. We saw there was sadness and joy. Of course, Mickey, Minnie, Daisy, Pluto, Chip and Dale, and Donald are the characters that we got to see at Touch of Disney. Whereas at the Boysenberry Festival, they had the mayor, and then they had I don't remember what the woman was. I think she was like something to do with she talked a lot about fashion, so I feel like she was some.
She was
sort
above
of like,
the saloon.
Yep, she was above the saloon. And then we also had lots of leftovers. So there were fewer characters to see, but they were more interactive at the Boysenberry Festival. So pros and cons
I
to both.
Loved the lighting at Knott's at Night because everything was purple, and I love purple. I thought it was gorgeous.
If you do check out Knott's Berry Farm, also make sure you go to Camp Snoopy at night to see the Easter decorations lit up because they take on a little different feel when they're lit up at night. They're almost a little like not creepy, but they just don't seem as like happy and playful at night. They seem a little more like
ominous.
Not evil, ominous. There you go. They seem a little like, ooh.
So another upside that we didn't talk about was they did have some musical performers that were playing some little concert, which was nice to see again. Everybody that was watching was socially distant, which was great. So it was nice to have, you know, live music again for people who have been missing that. The other thing that was a downside, and this is the only thing that was a little weird to us, was right when you walked in the gate, there was a photographer standing there, and he was kind of making it seem, he was like, take off your masks. And so it was kind of a awkward decision for us. We did take off our mask for that photo, but we took a couple other photos later on and we did not take our mask. We told them, we're like, we don't want to take our masks off, and that was fine. The first guy just kind of came off a little more stern about it, I guess. So
it was different, unlike Disney,
which they will slap you for taking your mask off for a photo. So
the other thing too that we noticed, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but I feel like it fits in with the conversation, was when we were at City Walk, the last day we were there, we got Butterbeer, and we're just so used to Disney rules. So we're used to in Disney parks, you're not able to take your mask off for photos, nor do you have a photo pass photographer type person asking you and telling you to take your mask off. So that really like took like, what, you know? I leaned over to Tag and I was like, we're not in Disney anymore. Kind of, you know, just joking. But then the other like difference, too, was when we were at Universal at City Walk, we got our Butterbeers, and Disney has trained us that we can't walk and drink. You have to kind of like pull over and be stationary to drink. So we pulled over and found a little like quiet corner and we're enjoying our Butterbeers. And we had someone from City Walk actually walk over and say, oh, you know, actually, you know, great that you've got these Butterbeers, but you actually need to go enjoy them in a designated area. So then she showed us where one of these designated areas were. So they at Universal have designated like eating areas to eat and drink. So you can't just pull off to the side and stop to enjoy your food. So it's a little confusing. I know this won't happen. It would be nice, though, if all of these theme parks, especially the ones, these ones, since they're all so close together, if they could all like somehow have like the same rules, so I don't have to remember, oh wait, no, I'm in Disney, it's okay if I pull off to the side to enjoy my beverage. Oh no, I'm in Universal, nope, I need to go over, you know, just I think that would help with guest confusion if that was more if we knew what to expect better, I guess.
Sure.
Way of saying that.
So the next day we met up with a longtime supporter of the show, Bob, who goes by Ace. He works for Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL, and actually worked on the Perseverance rover that just landed on Mars. Yeah. So that's super cool. So we met him over in Pasadena, and he took us over. We were able to go in the security gate, and we were able to take a picture with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory sign, like inside the security area. So that was super cool to see that. Mm-hmm. We went across. There's like a little reservoir thing, and we could look at the entire campus, which is really massive, actually. Super neat to kind of see that, especially, like I said, considering the fact that Perseverance just landed there, and he was getting messages while we were all together about sending commands to deploy the helicopter, which a couple days later was successfully deployed. So super cool.
The crazy thing about going to JPL was the first thing that we saw was the sign, and it was very lush over there. They had lots of trees. So I don't know. You couldn't really see too much past the sign. So I really had no concept as to how large that JPL campus was. So when we went across the reservoir and we saw it, my jaw dropped. I was like, holy cow. I think Ace said that there's like 8,000 people that in normal times work there or something like that. Yeah. It's a very, very large facility. It was really cool to see. But after that, we were decided that we wanted to, like I said, the big thing of the day was butterbeer. and we wanted to kind of hit up a couple of things along the way. I said to Tig, I'm like, I'd really like to go. Like, I had never seen the Hollywood sign. I'd never seen the Chinese theater. And of course, right across the way from the Chinese theater is the El Capitan. So, you know, I was like, if we could do Disney stuff, that would be great. So to the Google we went and quickly realized that we were very close to a lot of like things that were near and dear to Walt the man. So we went over to, we went to Griffith Park. We got to see the carousel, which we got to check off so many bucket list things.
Yeah.
And all of these things, of course, were closed, but it was just so cool because really, like, that's the first time I've ever got to even consider, like, think about, oh, we could go there. So I was like crazy excited about all this.
And Teresa had a whole bucket
only
list.
So many hours in the day, Teresa. You need to calm down.
Yeah.
So it was so much fun, though.
So Ace,
so much fun.
Ace grew up in this area, and so he knows the area very well. So the first place we went to was Forest Lawn. So we kind of started at the end, which reminds me of that Harry Potter saying, I open at the close. Mm-hmm. But we went to Walt's gravesite, where Lillian is also buried, and there was nobody there, which was great. It was kind of in a little corner that I don't know why I didn't expect it to be like in a little corner, but it was a nice little area. Very peaceful and serene. There's a little bench you could sit on kind of over there. It was just interesting because it was like the closest we'll ever be to physically Walt, I guess is the best way to say it. But I also, Teresa, I think, said this too. We kind of expected there to be more of like a shrine to him, like that people will have left a lot of stuff by his grave. The only thing that was there was an annual pass magnet that somebody had put in front of a statue mm-hmm. that was there. So,
you know, it was really surreal to be there. And mm-hmm. like, I got a little emotional when we were there just because it's like, wow, you know, how just wow. And, you know, we kind of, I'm still like a little like it was very surreal. And even mm-hmm. like thinking back on the experience, it was just like never did I even that was not something that was on my Disney bucket list per se, because it wasn't something that I don't know that I thought was that I really thought of, because I didn't know where his final resting place was. You know, I didn't know if maybe it was something private, you know, that only the family could visit, sure. you know, that sort of thing. So it wasn't anything I'd really thought of, but it was really, really just, I don't even know.
One thing I will say,
like, it was almost like time stood still when we were there. It was just very peaceful.
One thing I will say that I did not know at the time, there are two Forest Lawn cemeteries. A lot of famous people are buried in Forest Lawn. But a lot of the people we were thinking about, we wanted to go see because Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds are buried together in Forest Lawn, but not the one where Walt is. It was in the mm-hmm. other one. So just know that if you are going to visit these places and you want to see these other people, there are two locations. Mm-hmm. After we left Forest Lawn, we went to, like Teresa said, we went to the carousel. And there's a lot of cool signage on the outside of the carousel that talks about, Walt came there with his daughters and this is where they thought up Disneyland and all this. So really, really cool. Again, it was another one of those things of we're where history was made. Something that means so much to us, Disneyland, was conceived here, like the original thoughts for it. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of cool. The other thing was Ace knew one of the owners who had passed away fairly recently within the last year. And so we heard that whole story, and that was interesting mm-hmm. as well.
Very cool. Again, something that I would like to go back to since the carousel was closed. It was actually like the carousel itself had doors kind of closed, so we couldn't see the horses and like the carousel animals. And then there was also kind of a gate outside of it too. So we were a little ways back from it, but still just very cool to be there. So that is something that I definitely would like to go back once it's open and really get to experience.
Yeah.
After that, we realized that two of Walt's homes were actually pretty close by. The first one we visited is actually a private residence. So if you guys do want to go see this place for yourself, please just be aware that, you know, this is someone's home. Somebody else does live there. So just kind of keep that in mind. Be respectful.
It was on Google Maps as Walt's first home. So
yes, yes, it is. But still, anyway, so this home was, I did a little digging on this home. This was Walt and Lillian's first home, like as together. And so he had purchased this corner plot on Lyric Avenue and built the home. I think it was like a prefabricated type home. It did sound like Roy actually had a home next to it too. So I thought that was kind of neat. Which unfortunately I looked this up and found this out after we had visited. So we didn't really pay much attention to the neighboring home, knowing that it was Roy's home. But it was a very cool house. The thing that was surprising to me, for some reason, every time I see photos of like Walt, like, and in his family life and like in his home and in his yard, it always felt much bigger. So it was surprising to me that this was just this little tiny corner lot with this little kind of postage stamp backyard. But then in the grand scheme of things, with it being their first home, that did make sense. So then we did visit, there is a second home actually not too far away from the first home, which was just basically, if you look it up, it's called Walt's LA home. Now, this is the home that I know about and I like can visualize. It's the one that has like a very, almost like a tower looking room, that big round room. The very famous photo of Walt standing in the doorway with Mickey Mouse's shadow was taken in this home.
It was the one that was on Prop Culture.
Yes, this home was on Prop Culture. So this home, I do believe, in normal times does have tours. I will tell you this. I would not try to drive past it like Mm-mm. we did, because we drove, it's this windy, kind of scary road. We felt like we were in San Francisco. It's very, very narrow roads, very steep, windy.
It's two-way, but really you could only fit one car on it.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a little scary. So we Google Maps like, oh, you're here. And we're like, what? There's nothing here. So we drove past again. Oh, you're here again. What? And then all of a sudden we looked up because it was kind of, the house was kind of up from where the road was. And so we only got a tiny, tiny glimpse, but I did see that big round, I don't even know what you call those rooms. Like it almost looks like a tower. Yeah. Anyways, I did see the iconic round room. So I'm like, oh, you know, so anyway, so definitely need to go back to that one so we can actually see that house instead of just the wall and the gate. But that was still pretty cool that we were able to drive past it.
So then we continued on and then we saw the Hollywood sign. So we went up into the mountains there, and it's kind of interesting. This neighborhood definitely gets a lot of tourists, and they have a lot of signage like, you can't park here and don't look out over here. And they have some fencing up because I assume that it just causes traffic and stuff. There is a great lookout as you keep going, though. We did stop there, and on one side we could see the Hollywood sign, which was amazing. And then across the road, you could actually see down to Hollywood Boulevard, and you could see there's a reservoir there that I didn't know existed. That was really nice to get out of the car and kind of walk around a little bit and get some views of the area. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Next up on our Walt tour, of course, we had to go see the studios, mm-hmm. which, again, not open at this time, especially not open to the public to kind of go in and tour. But so cool. So cool to just be able to drive around that area and that kind of like that campus. We were able to see fun things like the Frank Wells building through the gates. We also got to drive past the animation building with the Sorcerer Mickey hat atop, which so cool. And then we had to peek through the gate and peek through the trees, but we did get to see the big building with the seven dwarves holding up like the roof or whatever. So that mm-hmm. was very, very cool. For some reason, it seemed bigger than I imagined it would be. I don't know how big I thought that building was, but the building it just seemed larger than life.
I'm with you. The building seemed bigger, but the overall campus seemed way smaller.
Yeah, the campus was not very big. So from the street, the part that I really wanted to see was like the original studio. So like Dopey Drive and like those buildings that we see all the like iconic photos of, like Walt and like early days of the studio buildings is what I really wanted to see. But those are kind of tucked. It seemed to me those were tucked more at the heart of the mm-hmm. area, which makes sense.
So I looked at it was built around afterwards. And behind, from the front gates that say the Walt Disney Company, if you look through where all the legends plaques are, on the other side of that is the building where Walt had his office. And that's kind of where Teresa's talking about. Mm-hmm. So if we would have known that, we probably could have tried to get a better angle of it. We did see next to the Frank Wells building, further back, was one of the older buildings, because you could tell from the iconic, you know, they have those shades and everything. We also saw the Walt Disney Studios water tower, which was pretty cool. And that was, we had to kind of drive around to the back to see that one. But very, very cool. Their fence has like Mickey-shaped tops on it and stuff like that. Excuse me, very cool looking. You can walk right up and take a picture in front of the Walt Disney Company gate, which we did. And it was just a lot of fun. We took a ton of pictures. And then after we left there, we went to City Walk finally, which was one of the last stops of the day where we could get our butter beer. I will say the butter beer was great, exactly how I remember it. It was amazing. Like Teresa already said, we did have to go to a seating area to drink it. We did check out the... they had a Harry Potter, they had the studio store, but a whole section of it was Harry Potter, and they had a lot of cool things there.
I was really impressed with the theming of that section of the store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like you were in Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very cool. Very cool. And then the final stop on our tour of the day, we did go back to Griffith Park. And we actually stopped by where the Live Steamers Railroad Museum was, because another thing of Walt's does live on in that portion of the park. Walt's barn is actually in this little area. So again, we were just kind of peeking through the fence and were able to find it. But still very cool to know that that a piece of Walt lives on, in something. It's just cool to see Walt kind of more as like a person and not just like the head of the company that we love. So it's cool to go to these places where he would spend his time. And like things like, he was very passionate, of course, about trains. And he was actually a member of this local Live Steamers Club back in the day. So I think it's really special that they're the ones that have his barn and are able to show that off.
Absolutely. So we dropped Ace off and we went back to have a last little bit of time in downtown Disney. We went into Marshlands. We went into the Lego store because they had a D23 pin that you could get there. Of course, like Teresa said, we missed World of Disney a little bit.
Yeah.
I do want to tell this story because I want this enshrined for all time. So as you enter off of Harbor... you pass the gates that they will close to close off the like bus area, and in the bush to the left is this push broom that we saw going in.
We saw it the first day. Yeah. So this broom saga started the first day we walked into the Disneyland Resort.
So there's this because we saw it like in the bush. I thought, well, somebody has shoved a broom. That's weird. But we kept seeing it, and then, what was it, the second day when we went to in for Touch of Disney, there was a cast member using it to brush, like, water off the path.
Yeah, I think we may have scared him, because we approached him and said, oh, is that the broom? And he kind of looked at us, and we told him, well, this is the, second or third day we've been here, and we've noticed this broom tucked in the bushes. Is this that broom? And he just laughed. He's like, yes, this is the broom.
Yeah. So then on our last day, we went to leave, and it was still in there. So I got a picture of Teresa pointing into the bush at the broom. I said, Teresa, I'm going to embarrass you. I walked over. There was two security cast members standing at the gate. And I said, would you mind if she took a picture with the broom? And they're like, what broom? And my first thought is, you're security, and you don't know there's a broom in here. Okay. Well, anyway... So the guys were like, I don't care what you do. Like, doesn't matter to us. That's interesting that there's a broom there. So
go take a picture of the broom. Knock yourself out.
Teresa pulled the broom out, and her and Deanne took this picture of them sweeping part of the walkway. And they thought we were all crazy. And we put the broom back in. And that was the end of our Disney thing. However, we also wanted to point out that we, Hawkeye Teresa, I think it was, saw that backstage there is a Starbucks.
Of course I would have noticed that it's coffee, Tig.
But it was hard to see this.
It was. It was pretty hard. My only regret is that we didn't have like a little sticky note to leave the morning broom user.
Oh, yeah.
A little note. That was my only regret with that. So the story behind the broom is apparently he had requested, I don't know if he had requested that someone come out and take care of some cleaning stuff out there. Anyways, they just decided it was easier to give this guy, who is not custodial, his own broom to kind of take care of the entrance way, as you were. Because he said what happens is they wash things, and then there's kind of this puddle of water, and he uses the broom to spread it out so that it dries out, and there's not just this puddle of water sitting there for most of the morning. So he had requested the broom, and of course, it's at the opening gate, so there's nowhere really to put the broom, so he just kind of shoved it into the bushes, and it's for all of the normal guests that apparently, because we're not normal, I'm sure everyone just walks by and doesn't even notice that the broom is there, and somehow we walk past the first day and we're like, there's a broom in that bush.
Well, I think this goes back to the conversation that we were having, Teresa. So I had this conversation with James earlier in the week before we left. My brain, and Teresa, I think, agreed that her brain is this way too. Our brains are very active when we're doing anything. And so we're looking around constantly looking for like input and stuff. So I think because we're weird, and our brains are so active, we notice these little things where I think most people just see the bush and they don't even register and they just keep going. So, but it's a cute story. So
it was fun.
If you go in, say hi to the broom.
Yes.
Wave at it. Don't mess with it though. The guy needs it. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with it. Well, that is wrapping up our trip. As we did with Disney World, we certainly talked a lot. But I hope you guys enjoyed our insights. If you are in the area and are able to do the Walt Day, I'll call it. It was very cool to go see all these things that influenced Walt's life and everything like that. There is another. Did you say, Teresa, was it that one or was there another house? It was a different house, right, that we didn't see where he had the Carolwood Pacific?
Yes. Yeah. There was a different house. It was like a house located out in the country. The two houses that we saw were both within the city.
Yeah. So we didn't see the one where he had his railroad in the backyard, mm-hmm. most famously, but maybe the next trip we'll have to hit something up like that. But it was nice to get away from the Disney bubble a little bit and see all of these other places that are so important to Walt, who created the park. Mm-hmm. So
definitely.
If you guys go and have a Walt Day, let us know. Send us an email, feedback@dlweekly.net. You can also talk to us on social media. So hopefully we've inspired you guys to do that stuff. And if you weren't able to attend Touch of Disney, hopefully you kind of lived vicariously through our stories of that. I'll try to put together a gallery of some of the photos that we talked about and put those along on our website with the show notes.
If you are interested, we do have on our Instagram, I did create a highlight reel. And it's the first one. It's called Touch of Disney. And if you go through it, I shared some photos from the archives, some photos of Disneyland and Downtown Disney, some videos and photos of our time inside Touch of Disney. Of course, we've got Knott's Berry Farm. And then I also did share the photos that we were able to grab of the places on our Walt tour. So you can kind of get a better visual of what those look like as well. Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer Vern to get the answers to this week's trivia.
Because we certainly didn't give them.
No.
Question number one, submitted by listener Jill M. As you enter the temple on Indiana Jones, look to the right. There's a painting of a god with jewels. What color is the jewel in the center of the headdress? Teresa said red. Tag said blue. Well, you need to slow down when you get into the park and look closer and see that it's green.
Dang. It was a primary color, at least.
And your second question, submitted by listener Whitney N. Who bought the first ticket to Disneyland and for how much? You were correct. That was Roy for $1.
You.
Woo! Thank you, Bowers. That one's a controversial one because Roy bought ticket number one, but the first, like, paid admission, the first person to buy a ticket at the turnstile was not Roy.
Sure.
I don't remember what the guy's name was, but it was a different guy.
Question number three, submitted by listener Donna S. What Disney employee created the wishing well seen on the side of the castle at Disneyland with Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs? That was John Hench.
Ooh.
That sounds right now that you say it.
And your fourth regular question, submitted by listener Quincy K. Who composed the music to the ride Space Mountain?
Randy Newman.
That was Michael Giacchino, who composed the score for other Disney Pixar movies such as Up, Inside Out, The Incredibles, Ratatouille, Rogue One, Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home, and Doctor Strange.
Nice.
Wow. I didn't know all that.
No.
Cool.
Yeah.
You weren't too far off with Randy Newman, Tay, because this guy also did lots of Pixar films.
Which is why I kind of tried to give you half credit for
That's
it.
That's funny.
Because you played the game. And your bonus question, submitted by listener Om D. In Heimlich's Choo Choo Train, what food items do you pass? You rattled them off faster than I wrote them down, so I'm pretty sure you got them all with our submitted answer of carrot, apple, Casey Jr. cookies, animal crackers, watermelon, Brussels sprouts, cupcake, mince, candy corns, and three pieces of candy, a jawbreaker, taffy, and chocolate mini Easter egg.
Ooh, we didn't get quite all of them.
No.
We didn't get the apple.
We didn't get the taffy.
The candy at the end. Or the cupcake.
Yeah. I should have remembered the cupcake.
And I said Brussels sprouts, but we decided on broccoli instead. So maybe that's only
That's okay. That. You said it.
I'll give you half credit for that. Well, listeners, how do you think Tag and Teresa did? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you've got the questions that could stump them? If you'd like to send some of that trivia to producer James and me so that we can use it to stump them here on the show, the address for that is trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic.
We're only a few weeks away from being able to say go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.